What do you want to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome into another edition of Meet Me at Mutual, our 16th episode. It's a very cold, at least here, December night. But finally, as Mr. Nagel is with me, I guess we should introduce John Nagel, Cardinals Farm, Daniel Shopdaw, C70 at the bat. You know us if you probably, I doubt you've just walked into this one blind, but maybe you did. Anyway, now you know who we are. Things warmed up today, John. We've got some other things to talk about, but let's go ahead and just jump into the Redbird Rewind with our newest addition.
He got it! Struck him out! Look at the scene on the field. McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
And that would be Dexter Fowler signing today, 5-year deal, a contract that was very reminiscent of Mike Leake's deal from last year. Kind of snuck up on people, but it really seemed like it was getting to the point. This is a move they had to do.
Yeah, it seemed like, you know, for the last couple of weeks, his name had just kept coming up. You know, names like Adam Eaton or Charlie Blackman would come and go. But it seemed like throughout the whole time it was Fowler's name that just kept coming up, and you know, I feel like the Cardinals do a really good job, and John Mozeliak does a really good job of kind of keeping a tight ship over there, and you know, it really didn't get out until he was on his way to St. Louis, and so I think that's, you know, that's pretty remarkable in this day, but yeah, it seemed like it was the one area that I don't think anybody's surprised.
Yeah, you're right. Mo, I don't know how he does. Keeps.
I don't either.
Unless they just have a very small circle of people that are really
right
on stuff. But,
right.
You know, I think if it hadn't been for somebody stumbling across Dexter Fowler on the plane,
right,
he would have showed up today and they would have said, oh, wow. I mean, you know,
imagine that. Imagine them announcing a press conference at, what, 10 o'clock in the morning. And, yes, you know, people probably thinking it's, you know, a new charity or, a, you know, a giveaway. And then here you go.
oh, by the way, we've got
new
a
new player.
Okay.
Yeah.
for all of that, there has it feels like it's been a little bit of a mixed reaction to Dexter Fowler. There are some people that say that this may not solve defensively center field, that Fowler has some issues there. I mean, just in general, I mean, what do you think of Dexter Fowler?
He wasn't my first choice, but I can't be, I guess, upset at this move because, you know, the Cardinals fans have been wanting a move. They've been wanting something done. Finally, something happened. And so, you know, you kind of have to go with it. And, you know, I'm not overly excited about it, but I think what I am excited about is more of his offense than his defense. But I guess defensively what it will do, moving Randall Grichuk over to left, I think that makes him a lot better outfielder. And so I think your outfield is definitely improved with Grichuk and left over Holiday. And then I think Fowler might be a little better in center than Grichuk, so you know, you're better there as well. So your outfield got better. The top of the lineup got better. I think the interesting thing is going to be how hard these guys are going to make pitchers work. Mm-hmm. Between Fowler and Carpenter, Diaz, Piscotty, those guys are going to make these guys work. And a pitcher is going to have a tough first inning with that top of the lineup. And I think that's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, somebody had a tweet out today that basically, I think the last 3 years, Fowler and Carpenter have been in the top 20 in pitches per plate appearance.
Right.
At least at the National League, maybe overall. And so that's that's a lot of pitches most likely for a pitcher to throw in the first inning, and that can only, you know, snowball, or usually would snowball into the rest of the game. You know, it's going to be kind of interesting to see what Mike Matheny does with the lineup. I mean, you got to figure he's putting Fowler in first, in leadoff, no matter what Mr. Carpenter thinks. I have a feeling even if Mike wasn't going to do that, his boss may tell him it's what he's going to do. But, I mean, you know, do you put Carpenter second? I think that's a good spot for him. But, somebody, I think it's Brendan Schaefer, had a projected lineup, and you start looking at 3-4-5, and it's like, well, they're okay, but that's not really what you feel traditionally. So maybe you move Carpenter to the third and have Diaz hit second. I mean, either way, you're probably going to be fine, but, I mean, how would you do it, do you think?
Well, I think I'm, you know, if that was your opinion there with Carpenter second, I think that's what I would go with Fowler, Carpenter, and Diaz. And I think it gets a little tricky after that. And, you know, we're going to talk about potential more moves, but I think the next play would be, you know, a run producer, someone to bring in all those guys who get on base. And I think if that could happen, I know, you know, we'll get there in a little bit, but I think that would be incredible. But I think I would probably go Fowler, Carpenter, Diaz, and then from there, we'll go from there later. I don't know. I don't know if you go Piscotty or you know, Peralta. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you probably go Piscotty.
Yeah.
Because I don't
Molina.
Know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. It's just kind of, there are some very good players, but I'm not exactly sure that it's a perfect lineup construction.
I feel like the top three is pretty almost ideal. Mm-hmm. You know, you have guys who are going to get on base like crazy, and then from there you're going to have to, you know, piece it together. But
yeah, and I think you're. I mean, if you put your first three runners on every game, then you'll be fine.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Hopefully,
yeah, those are the guys that are going to hit the most, and so that's what you want. So yeah, I mean, that's a good start for sure.
Yeah, it should be. Although we have seen the Cardinals turn that into nothing at times.
Right.
So maybe not.
Right.
I don't know. And maybe I just don't have a real good handle on Diaz yet, but he just feels to me, and maybe because he hit there more last year, more of a second-place hitter than a third-place hitter. And maybe that's remnants of that idea that your best hitter hits third, which is not necessarily accurate, or maybe even best lineup construction. But, for the years, Pujols hit third, and Holiday hit third, and, you know, I think Mark McGwire hit third when he was there for a long time, or for a while. And so I don't know that I raised Diaz to that level yet after one season, but, you know, again, he obviously had a great season, and if that's indicative of what he is, then third shouldn't be a huge issue, especially when you're not necessarily looking for the power there. You're looking for a guy that can drive in, you know, the runners on first and third, or the runner at second, you know, with one out, that you're going to hopefully have a lot in the first innings.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And you know, and I think, like you said, he's not, you know, his, you know, power numbers I don't think are going to be quite what they were last year, but he's going to get those doubles, and that's going to drive in the top two guys.
Is there a concern with you on length or cost of this contract? I mean, Dexter Fowler is, as we sit here today, 30 years old, will be 31 before the season starts next year. 5-year deal, you know, that takes him to 36, and, you know, that's usually past the prime for a baseball player. Is that a flag for you?
Well, I mean, I think that's the cost of doing business. And, you know, if they wanted him, you know, they were going to have to go 5 years, or I guess maybe significantly raise the annual amount. But I think it's 16.5, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And the last couple of years could be rough, but you're hoping for a good, you know, a good 2 or 3 years to start, and then maybe you can move him over to left field.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when Matt Holliday signed his 7-year deal, we thought, well, we'll get 2 or 3, 4 good years out of it.
Right.
And then he'll be overpaid by the end of it. And he really wasn't.
He wasn't.
But that's a rare contract. I'm not going to say that Dexter Fowler is going to follow that same pattern. But, you know, again, if he's getting $17 million, we don't know for sure, I don't think, but we're just assuming that it's kind of an even deal and not typically backloaded.
Right.
You know, that the big TV contract kicks in after, not after next season, but for 2018. So $16, $17, $18 million in 5 years from now is not going to be the drag on payroll, or at least on revenue, that it would be today. And even today, it's not a huge drag, I don't think.
Right.
So, again, is Dexter Fowler going to be overpaid at the end of his contract? Yes, probably. Is he going to be that productive at the end of his contract? I don't know, but I don't think either one of those things are going to derail the Cardinals in 2021 or whatever.
Right, right. It's not a $200 million contract that you're going to be paying for 10 years, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's not... I mean, that's the thing. As I think it was Aviva Alberto's put it earlier in the postseason was... or offseason, was that, you know, John Mozeliak doesn't sign albatross contracts.
Right.
You know, that one on the flip side, he doesn't sign the big, huge names either, because, you know, you have to sign those big, huge contracts to do that.
Right.
And that's why we get more Dexter Fowler than maybe some others. But it feels like this is a deal that the Cardinals can live with and definitely improves the team. Like you said, that the top of that lineup should be pretty interesting. And, you know, Dexter gets to start off against his old team as the Cardinals face the Cubs on Sunday Night Baseball to start the year. So if he wanted to endear himself to Cardinal fans, getting a couple of hits there against the Cubs that opening would probably do it. But, you know, I was listening to an interview with Mo, and he said not only was the baseball side of this pretty important, but he said the personality of Fowler played a huge role in this as well, as he felt like it was a guy that would fit in well, that, you know, brought a lot of energy and spark to this team. And, you know, just the little interactions we've seen in the press conferences seem to reiterate that. I think we talked last year about this team needing kind of a spark or needing kind of something. You know, do you think maybe Fowler can provide that, you know, inside the clubhouse?
And I think it's interesting that as you mentioned, Mozeliak kind of mentioned that, and it seems like he's, you know, in the past, and we've talked about this, he's kind of made some moves to kind of force a hand or two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is more than just forcing a hand and trying to get a personality in the clubhouse. It's, you know, about a good player. But it's interesting that you know, he makes a deal about someone who's going to become a leader instantly. And yeah, I think there's something to that. And I heard an interview today or somebody talking today on the radio, and they were saying that, you know, a lot of the guys in the clubhouse prefer that, you know, workman's attitude that Matheny has. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're okay with it. It's, you know, a Joe Maddon style wouldn't work here. And I'm not saying that's what Fowler's going to bring, but I think you got to have some, you know, you got to bring some fun to it. And so I think, you know, I think he's going to be great at that. And I think, you know, it'll be good for him.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously we've seen, you know, Carlos Martinez have his, you know, his water issues, and mm-hmm. we've seen, you know, Adam Wainwright with strained dances, and we've seen, you know, a number of guys that have personality. They're not all, you know, nose to the grindstone, this is everything, but they're, you know, when they're at the, when they're playing, it's a focus, and I'm sure that's probably will be the same way. But I think I think it was Will Leach that pointed out that maybe this will help, you know, break a little bit of that, you know, idea of the Cardinals being such a stick-in-the-mud franchise. And don't get me wrong, there's some reasons for them to have that reputation, but there's a little bit more personality on this team than you would expect. And when you mentioned that about, you know, Matheny and Maddon, you know, early on, when it didn't look like Fowler was going to sign, it looked like there were rumors, and I don't know how substantiated, that he didn't want to play for St. Louis because he didn't like the atmosphere, that there was this idea that maybe Jason Hayward or John Lackey had kind of indicated their displeasure here, or he didn't want to play for Mike Matheny or such of that. Now, either that was overblown or money makes everything better, one of the two, but what do you think? Was there anything to that, that he didn't, you know, that there's maybe a manager handicap, if you will?
I think there's a little bit of the two that you mentioned. I think, you know, I think it was a little bit overblown. I think there's a little bit something there. You know, I mean, you know, he'll be coming from, you know, kind of the complete opposite of a clubhouse in Chicago. And, you know, I think, you know, I could see, you know, Hayward or Lackey kind of saying, You know, it's nothing like this down there, or something like that. You know, I wouldn't look too much past it. I think he'll fit in, and you know, I think it's a little bit overblown.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there was immediately, you know, if he didn't want to play for Mike Matheny, it's because of the atmosphere, and of course, then there's a few times that people start trying to throw the race card in there too, which is
right.
Not where I want to go. But I also think, you know, I think there's got to be players out there, and we don't hear about them, but I think there's got to be players out there that don't want to play for Joe Maddon, for example. Because they don't want to be wearing pajamas on the field or whatever that nature. But we don't hear about that, or there's no, you know, backlash, if you will, there. And maybe, you know, maybe Cub fans would be that way, or maybe other people would be. But it feels like, you know, if there's a chance for some people to stick something on Matheny, they're going to take that chance. And
yeah.
Matheny gives them enough as it is. I don't know that we have to go looking for stuff.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, the same thing was Tony La Russa. You know, I'm sure he had a wide range of players who didn't want to play for him, and then some that would, too. So, yeah, I think every manager's got that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there were players, I think Berkman was maybe one of them, or some others, that didn't want to play for Tony La Russa until they got to the clubhouse.
Right.
And then really enjoyed playing for Tony when they actually saw, you know, what he was like, you know, on a day-to-day basis versus being the opposition. So,
right.
And, you know, there could be some of that, too. So, I don't know. Except Fowler did not seem to come across as this was, you know, a money situation.
No.
I mean, obviously, that played a large part into it, but it seemed like he did seem to want to be here, and, you know, I guess he says the right things, but he really, his personality seemed to indicate he's going to have a good time here.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, before that, since we last recorded, Cardinals have done two fairly major moves. The first being the signing of Brett Cecil to a 4-year contract, unless I'm mistaken. At the time, seemed a little bit of an overpay, but again, money is something the Cardinals have. But now, when you start looking at some of the closer money that's being tossed around and some of the other things, that Cecil deal doesn't look quite so bad, does it?
No, not at all. With you know, Melanson and Chapman getting big money, and you know they're probably better pitchers than Cecil, but still, I mean, I think Melanson got what, 14 or 15 million per year,
something like that.
I remember it being almost double what Cecil got, and I just, you know, 4 years. What was it? 4 years around 30 million. You know, I think that's something you can live with for a guy that can solidify the bullpen and just kind of, you know, make it, you know, just improve it big time. You know, I think another great signing, I think.
I have a friend of mine that lives here that's actually from Canada, so he's a Blue Jays fan, and I immediately texted him to say what he thought, and he said he always enjoyed having Brett Cecil as a Blue Jay, and I think that was a pretty good indication. Kind of looking at his splits, I mean, it looks like he's going to be able to be a guy that's not, I mean, they're not playing him to be Randy Choate. He's going to get some outs
on both sides
of the ball. You know, he struggled a little bit last year, but I think there was some injury issues. I can't remember exactly. But overall, the last few years, he seems to have been a guy that can, really solidify that bullpen. I mean, when you put him out there with Segrist and it's a big if still, but if Rosenthal is going to be a little bit more like the Rosenthal we're used to, you put those four out there, and you shorten the game a lot.
Right, yeah. And then you have Matt Bowman, too, who, you know, exceeded our expectations last season. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, shaping up to be a pretty solid bullpen.
Yeah, and I mean, and you got to figure out, you know, where do guys like Marco Gonzalez fit in? You know, because he's going to be out of options. He's going to probably be out there in that bullpen. Tyre Lyons is out for a significant part of the year. I think he will probably May or June before we see him. But, you know, there's a lot of interesting people that could be involved in that bullpen. And hopefully it's going to be a lot more sturdy than it was last year. Although, you know, really last year, I think it feels like a lot of that just gets tied back to Rosenthal, because I feel like overall, that bullpen wasn't all that bad, except for, especially after Rosenthal got out of the closer role.
Right, and when you have to start shuffling roles, I mean, that just kind of throws things out of whack. Yeah.
So anything else on Cecil? I mean, again, in being an American leaguer, I haven't seen him much. It's going to be kind of interesting, a different thing to look at. But, you know, overall, it just seems like that's another smart move. And Mo got out on that one early so that he didn't get it, didn't have to worry about those closers running up the price on him.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, definitely the first one to go. And you're right, who knows what his value might be now.
Yeah, I mean, he might like to know what his value is.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
But I imagine if you're a reliever and you get a 4-year, $30 million deal, you're probably going to take it. I mean, especially if you're not a closer, you'll
right.
lock that down and be very happy with it. So,
right. One thing to all those people listening out there: if you have small children, teach them to throw left-handed. Right?
Absolutely, because not only will they make a lot of money, they can play till they're 40 something. So,
right.
They'll be doing quite a bit of it. So, and if they can throw, you know, 95 while they're at it, that. You could probably start retirement planning. Anyway, okay. I didn't mention we had the Garcia trade, and we'll get to that in a minute. But there was one small issue that got done too. It was Brian Pena was released, and you know, I think that was a little bit of a surprise because it leaves right now Carson Kelly as really your only backup. Although the Cardinals seem to indicate they're going to try to find some sort of veteran guy to do that. I really was a little bit surprised to see them cut Pena loose. I think they were really disappointed in the defense, though, that he showed in the little limited time that he was back there.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, you know, I kind of feel like they could find a backup catcher if they needed, which, as you mentioned, it sounds like that's the way they're going to go instead of having Kelly back there. But you know, I feel like there's several guys out there that they could get a pretty reasonable price. I think the surprising part was, you know, that they're going to, you know, still be paying them. And, you know, we're not really used to that as you know, the Cardinals aren't really used to kind of just, you know, cutting guys or trading them and, you know, keeping the salary. So I think that's the surprising part. But I think the thought is that they can probably find a decent backup. And, you know, Molina's still going to carry the load. So, I see a little surprising, but I think they'll be able to find someone.
Yeah. I mean, we did see them do that with Ty Wigington a few years back where he signed for $5 million and cut him early, but you're right. It didn't happen all that often. I guess to some degree, the 40-man crunch got to him well, but, and maybe if he'd been healthier this year, that they would have factored that in a little more. But you know, it's just a little bit strange. Now I know obviously you've said this on the show very many times that you're a huge Carson Kelly fan. I mean, would you rather him at Memphis or would you rather him backing up Molina?
You know, kind of personally, I'd like to see him play every day in Memphis just to see you know how he's doing and to kind of follow him, but. I think he'd be fine either way. I think he would be fine as a major league backup, but it never hurts to get solid quality at bats. And I mean, he's still a young guy. It's not like it's not like he's wasting time at AAA at this point in his career. So, you know, I think either way is fine. You know, getting every day at bats never hurts.
Yeah, I would think it'd be, I mean, you know, there were years where, you know, especially like Tony Cruz, you know, would get like 2 at bats in April.
Right.
And that I can't, and I don't know that as much as it seems like the organization, and that includes Mike Matheny, are interested in Kelly. I just still can't see them forcing Molina out of the lineup more regularly for somebody like that. Now I do hope. I think that if maybe they can find a bullpen or backup catcher, I would like to see them do what they started to do last year and give. You know, because Pena looked like for a while there he was going to catch Mike Leake every time. I'd like to see that backup be a personal catcher to somebody be that regular. He's going to get in once every 5 days, and give Molina at least a day off or two off during the week. I don't know. I don't know if the Cardinals will go that route. I mean, you know, obviously Yachty didn't rest a whole lot in the second half, and it didn't faze him at all. So, I don't know they will, but I would like to see that. But I guess it depends on who they bring in.
You have to wonder if the decision to maybe, you know, keep Kelly in AAA has anything to do with the fact that, you know, Matheny's going to play Molina as much as he can. And like you said, he may only get a couple of bats a month, which wouldn't do him any good. you wonder if he's thinking that, Mozeliak's thinking that, and saying, you know what, let's just keep him at AAA where he'll get consistent at bats.
Yeah, I think they've got to, because like you said, he's just so young. I mean, you know, 22 yeah. right now, and what, he hasn't even played a full season in Memphis, has
no.
he?
No.
Yeah.
No, and Molina's got, what, this year and an option in 2018, right?
Let me double check. That sounds right.
I think so, and I'm assuming they'll probably pick that up. So if that's the case, you know, Kelly would be the backup for 2 years, and that's, I just don't think that's necessary.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting. You're right. It's a through 17 with an 18 team option. Let's see, it says it's 15 million team option, but that's only one more. He's making 14 this year, so it's not like a huge yeah. huge deal. You're right. They'll pick that up.
Assuming there's a big fall off, they'll pick that up easily.
And I don't, you know, honestly, it's Jody or Molina. I wouldn't be surprised if they picked that option up, like,
either way,
in the
yeah.
spring of right, this year, right, you know, and just go right. ahead and lock it down. Because Yachty, I don't think this is not, I don't see them treating Yachty or Molina, and I'm saying treated, but not that they did anything wrong with Matt Holliday, although there's some debate maybe there that we could talk about later. You know, I don't see them treating Yachty or Molina the same way. I see that. I think they're going to keep Yachty or Molina in a Cardinal uniform, one way or another, until he's ready to retire. You know, hopefully they'll talk to him about a transition to a backup or a less, you know, intensive role so that Carson Kelly can play every day. But I just, you know, I just can't see them letting him go wear Cub blue or Yankee pinstripes or anything
right.
like that. I just and Yachty, you know, we'll see how he does. Maybe in 2 years he's ready to retire. I mean, he would be 36 in the middle of that 18 year, so it seems like that's a little young for him to retire. But a catcher, you know, I have a feeling feels like Yachty could hit a wall and drop just because of how much
right.
he's worked on. But that's an interesting thing to factor in as well, because you know that was. One of the ideas, I mean, is they're floating around this this week was that, you know, maybe would you trade Carson Kelly and others to the White Sox for Adam Eaton before that deal got made with the Nationals? And that was an interesting discussion, I think, because if you trade Carson Kelly, there's nothing there.
Yeah, and, you know, I think he would be one that I would hate to see go more than some of the other big-name ones because you're right, there's... You know, Molina's coming, you know, it's getting close to the end, and it seems like it's a natural transition, and you would kind of lose that if you traded him. So I would think, you know, and I think a lot of his value, Carson Kelly's value, is not found in numbers and in stats, you know, like Molina is and I think you can't quantify that, and it would be hard to see that go.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think they can do that, especially with nothing else in the pipeline. In fact, they've lost catchers this
yep.
offseason. Mike Oldman gone, Brandon Pinion gone. I guess Rosario, I think he got taken off the 40-man, but he's still in Memphis.
Right.
Because nobody else wanted him to some degree. You know, I hate to say it that way, but Rosario's obviously
right.
got a very nice glove and
yep.
and sometimes looks like he hits with it. So... I keep thinking that we're going to get to this Garcia trade, but there was another move that I'd forgotten about, and that was the non-tendering of Seth Maness. That surprised me a little bit, just because it turned out Seth Maness didn't actually have Tommy John surgery. He had another, you know, he did have elbow surgery, but it wasn't Tommy John. And, I mean, Maness, except for, you know, he had a bad start, he went on the DL, he came back, pitched pretty well. It seemed like, you know, they would probably try to hold on to him, and get him, you know, deal with his rehab, but they just, I guess, couldn't do it. Had to free up some roster room. Were you a little surprised that that's the way they went?
Not really. I think of all the players up for you know, arbitration, I think he was the obvious one to non-tender, and I think it's just because of the amount of arms they had. They have in the bullpen and at AAA, that guys that I think could make the major league roster, and it's hard for someone who's not a big strikeout pitcher to succeed. And we've seen his numbers, maybe, you know, his little success he saw last year prior to that, before that, you know, his numbers were going the wrong way from year to year. And so I think, you know, the thought was maybe that early success he had was maybe not really who he was. And it's hard to be a solid pitch to contact pitcher. And, you know, they have so many arms out there and, you know, it looks like they're going to spend a lot of money. You know, they've spent, you know, over $100 million already. So save it where you can, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's interesting pulling up. I don't know. You might know more than I. I don't know if FIP is really reasonable for relievers as much as it is for starters. But it was interesting to look at his 4 years on his FIP is actually fairly consistent. Surprisingly enough, his ERA is of course all over the place, but the FIP is pretty even on the minus. Yeah, I mean that makes sense. And you're right. Trying to run a guy that's going to be arbitration eligible, trying to pay him while he's, you know, perhaps rehabbing him,
right,
is difficult to swallow. And I don't guess. I mean, I don't know what baseball's all of baseball's rules. I don't guess there's anything that says they can't re-sign him come, you know, May or June or whatever.
Right.
Nobody else has.
But I'm sure he'll catch on somewhere.
I would think so.
Yeah.
It would seem to me that somebody could take a flyer on him.
Right.
Because he does seem to be a guy that can, at least if nothing else, pitch fairly often and usually fairly well. I just, you know, with all this 40-man roster, maybe you could explain it to me because I don't understand this. all this, you know, they dropped people off the 40-man and they protected guys for the Rule 5, and that all made sense. But Jose Martinez is still on the 40-man roster, and I just don't see why. I mean, unless it's just outfield depth that they want to protect, why he's gotten a ride here where some of the other guys, you know, like Peña, for instance, were cut to make room for some guys that need to be protected.
Yeah, you can talk about Martinez that way. You can talk about Anthony Garcia. Is he still on the 40-man roster?
Let me pull it up.
I think so.
I think that you're right. That yes, he is.
Yeah. So there's two outfielders right there. Now, so they had one opening for Fowler, right? I mean,
well, he's gonna.
Yeah. Because I remember they had one going into the winter meetings, and so that goes to Fowler. So, mm-hmm. You know, another move happens, you'll probably see one of those two outfielders go now that they've added Dexter Fowler to the 40-man roster. But, you know, I think whenever you see these moves like Maness and Peña off the 40-man roster, I think that says more about them than other options. Because you're right, they could have went Martinez, they could have went Garcia, but you know they obviously had a reason to not want to bring back Peña or Maness, obviously. But I can see it. Yeah, I mean, I think those two guys in the outfield may be the next two to go if needed.
But you know, even so, they could have cut one of those guys and then had another spot to protect a guy like Alan Cordova, right? That was taken by the Padres
right.
In the Rule 5. Now, it feels to me that they're probably going to get him back. I can't see the Padres holding him
there,
but.
That's a special circumstance, and I can't blame him for not protecting
right.
Someone who hasn't played above rookie ball. That's I'm stunned that he was taken.
The Padres tend to do that though. They've taken what they took both Luis Perdomo. Well, I think two of them didn't we?
Yeah, that's
they
right.
Both of them. And this one, it's kind of interesting that they've done that, but it'd be interesting. I mean the Padres aren't good, but you're right. Keeping a guy. I would think that would really hurt a guy's development to not be able to do that.
And they took three. The Padres have three Rule 5 picks, and I think it's going to be nearly I would think it would be nearly impossible to keep all three on the roster.
I would think so. Especially, I would think pitcher. I mean, what are the other two pitchers?
I'm not sure.
I'd have to look and see. But, you know, pitchers are a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Because you can throw them out there in blowouts or, you know, extra innings or whatever, or hide them and not use them. But, you know, bench players, especially these days when you're carrying so many pitchers, it's difficult to not have something of value there. And then, to have three. I want to say maybe last year they had two, though. I don't know. It's an interesting maybe that's the new market inefficiency is Rule 5 guys. Okay. So now I think we can get to the Jaime Garcia trade. I think we've cleared all the other stuff. Let's talk about that. Garcia traded to the Braves for 3 minor leaguers. John, I mean, just I know we'll talk about the minor leaguers a little bit later, but just on overall, what were your thoughts on that deal?
I think at first it was kind of surprising that that's what the return was. You know, as everybody was thinking that he would be part of maybe a bigger package, but I think, you know, once you look at it and you see that he's, you know, up after 2017 and, you know, he's had questions before and he's had injury concerns before, I think that's about right what they got back. And I think they maximized what they did get back in return. So, you know, not surprising. I think, you know, I have, you know, living down here in Atlanta, I have a lot of Braves friends, and I had one of them ask me today, like, you know, how, you know, who is he and, you know, who won the trade? And I said, you know what, honestly, I think it's good for both sides. You know, the Braves get a pitcher who could turn out to be really good. And they lost, you know, they have a pretty loaded farm system. You know, they lost some, you know, not great prospects, solid prospects, but, you know, I think it worked out for both sides. And, you know, I think at first it was like, really, that's all. But then once you look at it, it's, yeah, it's probably about right.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting, really, when you look at the situations that the Cardinals also aren't paying any of that $12 million that
right,
they picked up on
right.
option. I mean, Braves are paying all of that, which, right. you know, my thought, or initial thought was, well, maybe they should have picked up some of that and maybe gotten better prospects, but as a number of people pointed out, it's Atlanta. They're probably just getting him to maybe flip him later on. They weren't going to give anything better for him, so at least,
right.
you know, it's a little surprising even then that they... Atlanta took on that money.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, they could have, you know, declined the option and they would have gotten nothing for
right.
him, you know.
Right.
And so now they clear the salary and they get, you know, 3 prospects. And I think kind of an under the radar need for this club was pitching depth in the high minors. And they got 2 guys. One, I think, well, we'll get into them later, but I think you have a couple guys that could step in and have an impact if needed, and that was a big hole. And I know we talked about it several times last year.
Yeah, I mean, that was immediately what I thought. Not only that they needed that depth, but they also get, you know, one of those guys goes on the 40-man, but one of them's not on
yeah.
there. And
right.
that gives them
right.
a little bit of flexibility to leave a guy in Memphis and be ready, you know, if they need to add him later on or, you know, because there's going to be guys, you know, Tyler Lyons is going to go to the 60-day DL.
Right.
And others that are going to move and you'll free up some spots eventually. And so, yeah, I just felt like that was a lot more because they can't, you know, they couldn't, that's why they lost Tim Cooney. It was another one we haven't talked about, but, you know, they lost Cooney because he was out of options and Marco Gonzalez is out of options, I believe. And so those are guys that, you know, you're going to have to deal with at the major league level. So to have a guy that hasn't really started that option process yet because he's not on the 40 man, I think that's a very nice thing for this team to have because when injuries hit, they needed to have some people that, you know, maybe had a little bit of upside, but were ready for the big leagues.
Yep.
Yeah. Because I don't know. I mean, what does Memphis have besides these guys?
You know, I was trying to project their starting rotation, you know, a couple weeks ago, and I think you have Luke Weaver. I think that's going to be where he's going to start. And then, you know, I think the 2 guys they got from the Braves, Gant and Ellis, you have Trey Nielsen, who's a solid prospect, and then, of course, Mike Myers. Mm. So, I mean, you know, they've got some pretty solid depth there. You know, and then there's even a couple other guys who could see, you know, Austin Gomber.
Right.
He's going to be fighting for a spot. So, you know, it's slowly building, but that trade definitely helped.
Yeah, it definitely did, because I know – Well, I mean, you know, that's what we got last year. You had, you know, Jerome Williams pitching in Memphis.
Yeah,
And when Jerome Williams is pitching for you in whatever spot in your organization, you probably have issues.
You had him. You had Deck McGuire and Jeremy Hefner. You know, old. You know, I no offense, but washed up. You know, AAA, Quad A players yeah. They were just kind of biding time until we kind of built back up the better depth that we see now.
Yeah, I mean, those are the guys that you have to have because you want somebody yep. that might need to be a spot start that has had a little bit of experience, but
yep.
not anybody you want to rely on. And
right.
the fact that Jerome Williams spent a lot of time on the major league roster is
right.
is not something we want to relive
right.
if we can help it. You know, you're right. It's to see Garcia go, as some others have been listening to some other the podcast, you know, pointing out that he's one of the few left from the 2011 team. A guy that, you know, just, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what people think of Jaime Garcia in 5 years or something of that nature.
Right.
Because he had some very good games in St. Louis, but, you know, I think he's probably, most of his career is going to get overshadowed by that inconsistency that he's always had, and the fact that he really hacked up some playoff games that that's going to kind of probably be some of what of his legacy.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. But what did you think? I mean, you have any final thoughts on Garcia? Because, you know, he really seemed to be a guy that, man, if he just put it all together, you know, like he did those first year or two in his career, he would be that, you know, top of the rotation guy.
Yeah, I agree, and you know, it's kind of frustrating to look back and see that he'd never really put it all together, and you know, wish him well, but you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens to him in this season. He had some dominating games, like you said, some kind of surprisingly good games that if he could string more of those together, he could, you know, he could still be in this rotation as you know, at number two or number three.
Yeah, I mean, things would be all a lot different now. You know, yep. Of course, his relationship with the front office probably played a little bit into them getting rid of him. But you know, this is also business. If he was that good, they'd handle it. So, yeah, I think that's just going to be kind of interesting to see. You know, obviously, it feels like that if he has a very good year, he's not going to be in Atlanta all year long.
Right.
It feels like that's what they're doing is collecting a lot of old players to flip at the trade deadline. And what, Dickey and Cologne and Garcia, that's not the rotation you expect for a rebuilding team.
Right.
So, all right, well, let's go ahead quickly, and now that we spent, you know, almost an hour on that part, and shift into up the middle.
Alisaev, the second for one, the double play! What a double play by Ozzie Smith! Oh, mercy!
And right now, let's spend this time talking a little bit about what the Cardinals might do next, should do next. You know, John Mozeliak, in his typical fashion, is saying he's not necessarily considering the team complete, but he's happy with what he has. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's done doing stuff. And obviously, as we talked about, backup catcher seems to be something they're going to do. Is there another move that this team can make? Is there something? Well, I guess maybe we should go. There's a couple of Twitter questions, and we'll get these in here now because these kind of go with it. Patrick McCarthy, who's New World Bulls, asks if Justin Turner is still a possibility. John or Teffel Shund 4, which I always will say wrong, but wants to know if Mo will make a move on Edward Encarnacion. It feels like maybe both of those guys could happen. I mean, not both of them, or either one of them. Yeah, I mean, both. Sure, let's just go both.
You know, I think for me, the value of those two guys, you know, you might want to take a shot at them more so now, since after getting Fowler, because, you know, you would now only lose the second round pick, for signing those two, as opposed to, you know, the first round pick. You've already lost the first round pick. So, you know, why not just load up on that and just kind of, you know, punt the draft, I suppose, at least the early part of it. By getting, you know, it seems like Turner would be the better fit if you can get him at 3 or 4 years, which I don't know if you can do that, because that way you can keep Carpenter at first. Whereas if you get Encarnacion, you're going to have to shift Carpenter, I guess, back to third, which, you know, he wasn't the best at. But it seems like from what we've been hearing that they're kind of more on the Encarnacion side.
Yeah, I don't, you know, the Cardinals made it fairly clear early on, and we've talked about this, that Carpenter was going to play first base, which seemed strange to make a public announcement. Again, you can tell Carpenter, hey, prepare to play first. But you know, so they would have to backtrack a little bit if they went and got Encarnacion. Right. But, you know, as we talked about earlier, that lineup still feels like it needs a thump in the
yes.
middle of it.
Yep.
And there's no doubt Encarnacion could do that, and Turner could probably do that as well, and then you could keep, like you said, keep him over there. I don't know, infield defense either way is maybe kind of iffy, but for the most part, I think, as much as we hate to say it, maybe that bat has to be a big deal, maybe a little bit bigger than what the glove would be right now.
Yeah, I think so, and I think if you added Encarnacion, I think that would just kind of, I mean, that would almost, for me, be a dream scenario. You have these great guys who can get on base at the top, and then you have this guy who's just going to knock them in, you know. And I think, you know, now that you see how he would fit, you know, I would think you would, John Mozeliak would, and then also his, it seems like his value's kind of gone down the last week or so because, you know, you hear teams that he could possibly sign with, like the Yankees. Well, they're out of the mix now because they got Holiday. You know, the Astros, Beltran, you know, they don't have a spot for him. Mm-hmm. So all these teams that Encarnacion could go to, you know, they don't have a need for him. And so maybe his value has come down enough where Mozeliak says, you know what, let's go for it.
Opportunistic has always been one of Mo's is a word that he likes to use a lot.
Right.
And that's what either one of these feels like they could be. Because, yeah, it's pretty surprising that both those guys made it through the winter meetings and nobody even made a real significant push to sign them, it didn't sound like. And like you said, places that it looked like they would go to, things dropped off. Now, the Blue Jays, missing him, missing Jose Bautista.
Yeah.
You kind of think that maybe something's going to happen there, that they'll at least get one of those guys back because they're in the mixer for Fowler. But again, you know, nothing's happened yet, and that doesn't mean that it's not going to, but the longer those kind of guys sit out there, the more likely it is that they're going to be able to take You know, maybe they take a one-year deal and, you know, prove they can hit in the National League for Encarnacion or, you know, prove they can do this and then get back out on the market. Although I think next year's free agency is a little bit better. You know, you try to do something that way. I don't know. I would like to see them do that. But it feels to me that this is one of those things that we would like to see, and it feels like it could work, but it's also so much of a stretch for the Cardinals to do that I'd be a little surprised if it happened.
Yeah, I would be too. I agree.
If I was putting odds, I won't force you to do that, although you can if you want to, I would put better odds on Turner, just partly because they have already told Matt Carpenter what they want to do with him, and Turner feels like, Encarnacion feels like a bigger splash than the Cardinals would do, even though maybe he isn't.
Turner feels like a better fit to me, because he's a pretty solid third baseman, better than Carpenter was over there, and you can keep Carpenter at first, and he's, you know, he's going to get on base. He's got good power. It just seems like a better fit. But again, if he wants 5 years, that might be one where you would say, because then you'd have him and Fowler kind of would be, you know, getting older and have a couple of years left. So that may be something to think about too. You wouldn't want two aging veterans in the field with, you know, lengthy contracts.
Yeah, and that is true. Although, you know, if either one of these guys, you know, because Encarnacion is a little bit older than him, but seems like he probably might not take. He might, especially now, go for a 3-year deal with a higher value than a 5-year deal.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Turner just, it does kind of feel like he's in the middle of a career renaissance, if you will. And is he going to keep it going, or is he going to, you know, kind of fall off as fast as he showed up? I don't know. I mean, the Cardinals have a better feel for that, and if they sign him, I'm sure that they will feel like he's going to be, if he degrades, it's going to be gradually. But that, you're right. He just feels like a better fit. I think if I was to pick which one I wanted, I might go with Encarnacion, just because I think he brings more offensive power to this team.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with you there, too.
Yeah, but yeah, I think, like you say, either one of them, you know, if you can put a guy that can hit 20 to 30 home runs in that 4 spot and move Piscotty to 5 And, you know, you're looking at, you know, like Wong is your eighth guy and Grichuk's right down there seven. You know, that's a lineup that scares some people. And it's kind of funny, as I was thinking about this today, you know, all this offseason has been focused on is hitting, is getting a center fielder, getting, you know, maybe a Turner or an Encarnacion. You know, the Cardinals hit pretty well last year, at least for power. And I'm not saying they didn't have some offensive issues, and they shouldn't be focusing on that, but the pitching staff was the biggest problem, and you don't hear them really addressing that. So you're kind of hoping for bounce backs. You're kind of hoping that, you know, Alex Reyes can pitch, you know, take that next step. But if they do, if that rotation comes around and you put another thumper in this thing, I think suddenly, I don't know that you're not the favorites, because the Cubs are still going to be the favorites, but that's not a 17.5 game gap anymore.
Right. Yeah, the Cubs aren't going to win what they won last year. And, you know, with adding that, you know, the Cardinals are going to be better. So you would definitely cut into that lead for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. If Encarnacion or Turner is still out there in January, I think the Cardinals might be in it. I don't see them making a move between now and then, though.
Right. I agree.
It just feels like, I mean, you know, who knows? Mo does strange things, but, you know, he's also pretty, of course, everything gets real quiet around the holidays, too. I mean, nothing goes on. So, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see a little bit. And to back up a little bit, because you talked about it, and I meant to mention it when we were talking about Fowler, how surprising is it that the Cardinals did that, that they lost the first-round draft pick? Because that has been something they have clung to like gold over the last few years.
Yeah, there's a little bit there, but I think we've come to a time where, again, that's kind of the price to play, right? 5 years, and then you're going to lose the pick. You know, they've kind of built up first-round picks, it seems like, the last few years. You know, they've had multiple ones for quite a while. And so, you know, now's the time, I think, to go all in and get your guy. And, yeah, you'll give up that first-round pick to make it happen.
It is interesting that this is the last year that will happen. The new CBA, meaning that you will not be giving up first-round picks. So it's a risk you take now. And the Cardinals, you know, not only did they draft a lot of people last year, they spent a whole lot of money in the International League. So they've got... Yep. I'm sure feel like talent, and I don't know. They may know that this upcoming draft is not as strong, and they can afford to drop a pick. But you know, this is probably the highest they've picked in a while. 86, you know, what was 18th, I guess, before, you know, something like that. So that's pretty high for them. So it's interesting that they gave it up. But you're right. It's just one of those things that they had to do. I mean, there was nobody out there that didn't have a pick attached, so they had to do it.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else that the Cardinals should do, or you think they might do? Like you said, backup catcher. We're hoping for the big bat. Do you think the bullpen is fine as it is, or do you think they'll bring somebody
in? I wouldn't be surprised if they brought someone else in. You know, I kind of feel like you can never have enough. You know, there was Wade Davis talk at the meeting, so I wouldn't be surprised if they brought someone else in. Definitely not to the level of Cecil, but someone who, you know, could compete for a spot out there.
It still feels to me that they need to trade Matt Adams. Because I feel like Adams needs to play. And with Carpenter going to play first, even if they don't add anybody else in, he's not going to play over there very much. And I know he's a nice bat to have off the bench, but I don't know how well he can do that on a regular basis. So it feels to me that he needs to get moved. And now that's the kind of thing you thought, okay, Garcia and Adams and, you know, some other, you know, maybe a Weaver even for the center fielder. And obviously the trade market is a little bit more ridiculous than we thought it would be.
Right,
If Adam Eaton is any indication. Do you think, I mean, it feels like, I guess, if they're going to do it, they're just going to get some minor leaguers for those guys.
Yeah, and you know, I would think Matt Adams would have some value. He plays a solid first base. He's got decent pop. I don't know. It just seems like that a lot of people underestimate. I don't know what the word is. What he can offer, and I think, you know, he's not going to bring back a starting lineup type guy, but I would think there would be teams that would be interested.
I would feel. I mean, you look at him. You know, because OPS plus over the last, he's, you know, 82, 129, 116, 78, 105 over the last five-year career.
Right.
So last year he was a smidgen above average in that regard. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got, you know, hit 16 homers last year. I feel like if he can stay healthy, which is an if, you know, he could hit 20, 25. He could. I think he's better than a 250 hitter. You know, I think there's a lot of. I mean, I would like to see him stay in St. Louis. I'd like to see him play regularly. But if Carpenter's going to play first, or you know, if Edwin Encarnacion's going to play first, there's not a spot for him. And so,
right.
Like I say, I'd like him off the bench, but I just don't know that that's the best. I think he needs. I mean, he's 27. He's not getting. You know, he's getting into that prime.
Right.
He needs to kind of play. So. I'd like to see them find some place for him, but I don't know what that is. And obviously, if he stays in St. Louis, that's great, and maybe he can do something in his limited time. But it feels like he's a guy that they could move, and I don't know if there's anybody else that's just feels obvious. I thought there was some idea there when you started talking about Davis and Kane, and if Wong could be in that part. I could see that happening, but it feels like they're not going to trade Wong unless they're just overwhelmed.
Right. Yeah.
So, and who knows? Maybe they'll trade Matt Adams for the backup catcher. Hopefully not.
Yeah.
I feel like he could be worth more than that, but maybe not. You know, I'm not a very good judge of value, I don't think, either. So, we'll see. All right. Well, let's go ahead then and go on to our futures report.
0-1 to Pujols. In the air, left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
All right, John, I know you wrote it for Kangaroo Court, which is fired up and ready to go nowadays, it seems like. You wrote about the three guys that the Cardinals got in the Jaime Garcia trade. So why don't you talk a little bit about these guys and what we might expect out of them?
You know, I think we mentioned earlier that, you know, John Gant and Chris Ellis kind of provide that depth that you need at the top of the system. I think Gant is more ready than Ellis is he had 50 innings. Gant pitched 50 innings for the Braves last season, so he's a guy that I think could step in a relief role. You wouldn't need him as a starter. You got a couple starters that can go, you know, he could be a reliever, I guess, if you needed to. I think Ellis is a little bit more of a interesting guy in that, you know, his walks kind of got out of control a little bit. But he's one that's kind of, if he gets things together, he could kind of pass Gant on, I don't know, on a prospect list, I suppose. You know, I kind of have Gant in front of him because he's a little, I think he's a safer pick. But if Ellis gets with, Brian Eversgaard at AAA Memphis, and, you know, works out the kinks, he could be pretty solid. As far as Dykstra, Luke Dykstra, Lenny's boy. It's interesting. He's got an interesting profile as a second baseman. I think he was drafted as a shortstop, but he had to move over to second. And he can hit. Doesn't have any power, but you know, he's not going to strike out. He's not going to walk, really, I don't think. But he can hit the ball. And it'll be interesting to see what his path takes him. You know, I think it's going to be tough for him to break through because he's going to be a singles hitter, and then he's only a second baseman. You know, he can't really play, I don't think, anywhere else. So, you know, he may be kind of a guy that just kind of fills out some depth in the minor league system, maybe can see some time as a backup, as a utility infielder. But, you know, as we mentioned earlier, I think it fits some needs that we had in the system.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Dykstra, it feels like if you can't hit for power in the lowest levels, then you got problems.
And he legit has no power. I don't think he's hit a home run in a few years. So
yeah, and you're right. A 300 or so batting average is nice, but he doesn't walk either, from what I'm seeing. I think I'm reading on your stuff. So, 300 is nice, but it's not going to get you very far unless he adds to it. So we'll see. I guess if he does. Cardinals actually saw Gant last year, a couple of innings in that first early April. They hit him pretty hard, but he's got the really weird delivery too, which I guess if you develop a gimmick, maybe that gets you a little bit farther along. And I don't know if how that works with his stuff, if that helps it or not, but it's a very, very weird thing to watch.
Yeah, and I think John Mozeliak mentioned that when he was talking about him, that they think that delivery kind of maybe creates some of the confusion that the hitters have when they face him.
And very, very likely, because it seems like he puts his leg down and shakes it all around and does all these things, and the guy's just like, just throw the ball. So
right.
That's going to be interesting. And I mean, I think we'll see. I imagine we would see Gant. I would imagine we would probably see Ellis at some point in time this year. And so it'd be kind of interesting to see what they can do on the big stage as well. Also, in your bailiwick, the Cardinals added, as we talked a little bit earlier, they added four guys to the 40-man roster. Any surprises there? Anything that you would have done differently?
I don't think so. They the pitcher, I don't know if you've got the 40-man roster pulled up.
The four that they added were Sierra, Alvarez, Sosa, and Rowan Wick.
You're talking about the minor leaguers. Yeah.
The ones that they added on.
I thought you were talking about some minor league free agents. No, yeah. No surprises there. I don't think so. I think, Wick is kind of an interesting one in that, he's still relatively new to pitching, but he had some pretty good success with Springfield. He can throw the ball really fast. he's the next Sam Tuivalala, I suppose. It'll be interesting to see how he develops. As far as Sierra, Sosa, and who's the other one? Sierra, Sosa.
Alvarez.
Oh, and Alvarez, yeah. Young guys who, now that we look back, it was probably a good idea that they protected them. Mm-hmm. It'll be a while before those guys, make their way through. So, yeah, I'd say that's about right. It was nice to see that neither Ryan Sheriff or, Corey Luttrell got picked up in the Rule 5 draft, and that those guys will be solid left-handers in the Memphis bullpen.
It seemed a little bit strange. I hadn't really given it much thought until you said that, but, I mean, we were clamoring a little bit for Sheriff to get a call-up last year. It seems
surprising
that the Cardinals, not only that the Cardinals didn't protect either one of those guys, but that nobody else. I mean, like you said, we talk about Cordova going, and he's a single A guy that's not likely. These are guys that could really help a team in theory right now. So it's a little surprising to see them not go.
I wonder if there. It seems like maybe there's more of a shift like the Padres have, where you take younger guys with higher upside and maybe stash them for a year and then put them in your minor league system instead of maybe more ready to go guys. I don't know.
And you go out and, quietly, tweak their hamstring or something, put them on the DL the rest of the year.
Right,
you could do that. It's not likely. Not,
right.
Hate not to, but that does happen at times. There is that. But then, you look at the Cardinals, and they took Bowman last year, and look how effective that was. And now they have him, so they can move him up and down if they need to. So it's interesting to say that. As you mentioned, the minor league, they signed some guys to minor league contracts that get invites. They're not on the 40-man. Trent Huffman, Todd Cunningham, Wilfredo Tovar, Zach Phillips, and Kendry Flores. I don't know if Phillips or Flores was the one maybe you were thinking of.
It was Flores. He's one that should probably be at Memphis, too. The rest of them, Huffman will likely be, I'm assuming, the first baseman at Memphis. Cunningham will probably play in the outfield at Memphis. So they're just kind of adding some upper minors depth there.
Yeah, you got to have those organizational soldiers, if you will, that can do that. All right, anything else minor-ish that you want to talk about?
I don't think so.
All right.
I think that's it.
Well, let's shift into swinging away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols, and it's 9-9. They just won't go away.
All right. Well, we answered a couple of our Twitter questions already. We didn't get too many of them this time around. And the other two that we did get come from Ben Kelly, Beefcake 5, who sends us some about every show. Let's do the baseball one first. If you could get one free agent or trade target for Christmas, who would it be? And I'm assuming he's talking about...
realistic.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't think Mike Trout or Nolan Arendonso right, or anything right. like that gets to work. But if you could have one free agent or trade target, who would it be?
I think, I don't know. I think we're kind of going back between Turner and Encarnacion at this point. And I think we'll, you know, I'll stick to my answer earlier and we'll say Encarnacion.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I would, just in a personal standpoint, would be very, very interested in seeing Andrew McCutchen in the outfield. I don't know that the Cardinals, if Pirates would make a trade, and obviously there's still some if on, I think, maybe if McCutchen actually is available, although the Nationals tried real hard to get him. And I know he might be on the downside of his career, as amazing as to say, but I've always enjoyed Andrew McCutchen and enjoyed seeing him in Pittsburgh, so if he was playing in St. Yep. Louis, that would not bother me a bit, even though... you know, that's not going to happen with Dexter Fowler out there, but,
right.
You know, we can move, we can make adjustments and shift people around and trade people if necessary. So,
I always thought the Adam Eaton thing was interesting until obviously we saw the price that it took, but I mean, he was a guy that had lots of control and was, you know, a pretty solid player, but definitely not for that price.
No, I mean, that was, what was I hearing? That it was basically the equivalent of Alex Reyes, Bader, and... forgotten, maybe Sierra.
Well,
something like
you
that.
You know, I saw that too, and I don't think that's pretty that's accurate because the Nationals gave up obviously Giolito, who mm-hmm. is a you know the second best pitching prospect behind Reyes, but they also gave up another pitching prospect who's in the top 50 of all Major League Baseball mm-hmm. prospects, and the Cardinals don't have that second thing, and that's you know Derek Gould has written about that how there's a gap after Reyes and. You know, it seemed like, you know, Gould said that, you know, Mozeliak was getting frustrated, kind of, that, you know, any team that he talked to, they would want Reyes, and he would say, well, no, you're not getting him. And then they would say, well, there's nobody else, you know. And so I think that's the difference. And so you can't really, you know, I try to put together a package that would match the Eaton thing, and they just don't have it.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have the pitching prospects that the Nationals gave up other than Reyes, and then they don't have, you know, top 100 prospects that are, or I guess maybe top 50 prospects that you would, that are closer to the majors.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm a little surprised that maybe just because, you know, again, you always overvalue your own prospects, but it felt like Luke Weaver would have a little bit more cachet than that. Again, he's not a top 50 prospect or anything like that,
right.
But... you know, I didn't realize the gap between Reyes and Weaver was quite as large as it is. Because I kind of thought that was, you know, if you were looking at it before the season, I kind of felt like it was going to be, you know, maybe you're looking at Weaver, Garcia, Adams, or Weaver, Garcia, or Weaver, Adams, Wong, or whatever as a package for somebody and be able to do something with it. But obviously that's not the case.
I think there's questions about Weaver's, like how high he can get, mm-hmm. how good of a starter he can be. You know, I think obviously Reyes, he's got the ceiling of an ace. And I think Weaver, there's questions about, you know, whether he can be a three, maybe. I don't know. And I think that's the problem, is that his ceiling is not as high as you might want. Granted, he's not very risky because he's obviously already seen plenty of major league time, but he's not going to be that one or two that you might want also.
Yeah, and that's true. And again, yeah, he obviously doesn't have the fastball and strikeout abilities that Reyes has or
right.
a lot of the top
right.
prospects do. That's big when you get it into
yep.
to trade situations. So anyway, the other question from Mr. Kelly is, who do you normally celebrate Christmas with and where? As we are getting to that time, you know, just less than, just right at a couple of weeks from the holiday. John,
yep.
What do you do for Christmas?
My parents live with us here, and we usually go to my in-laws. They live in the Georgia Mountains, about an hour and a half away. So we usually take a good few days and go up there, and, you know, the kids love it, and you know, they've got a lot of land, and you know the dog loves it, so that's where we usually head up there. What about you?
You know, my parents live here in town or right outside of it, and we usually go out there on Christmas Day. And my grandmother lives down the street from me now, and we usually have that side of the family at some point in time around Christmas. You know, ever since, you know, occasionally when I first got married, my wife is from Ohio, and so we would go up there at Christmas. But once we had the kids, we decided we'd rather stay here.
Right.
The biggest thing we do, and in fact, it's a week from Sunday, we do an open house that we invite friends and church members and everything like that. And my wife makes literally 1,000 cookies, and we just have people. You know, we probably have roughly, we've had around 100, 120 people coming in and out for that event, and we really enjoy doing that. And so we'll be doing that next Sunday. In fact, I was making some chocolates. I usually do some chocolate stuff for that, so I was doing that this afternoon, and we've got the house decorated, and we're getting ready to go for that. So
that's
the big thing. So, let's see. That's all our Twitter questions. Anything else you want to talk about, John?
You know,
or not?
Nah, not really. I looked at you know what Harrison Bader's role might be now, and I think it's an interesting discussion because he was kind of in line for a starting spot, you know, maybe later 2017, and obviously now things change. But you know, I think he's not. I don't think he's going to go anywhere, and I think you know his development still continues. And you know, as I wrote, he can push Randall Grichuk a little bit. You know, maybe late in 2017. So I don't think that fans should worry that, you know, what's going to happen to Harrison Bader now. I think he's going to get his needed at-bats at AAA, and, you know, we'll go from there.
Yeah. There's no reason to get rid of Bader. I mean, you got to have that depth,
right.
But you're right. I mean, we don't know what we're going to see out of Randall Grichuk yet. I mean,
right.
It looked better, on the end of the season when he played more, but you know, it looked pretty bad early in the year when he played.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, if he struggles again, they may not hesitate to go ahead and bring Bader up and see what he has and go from there. But yeah, we really ought to talk about the fact that the Kangaroo Court is really alive and well right now. It seems like y'all have gotten quite active over there.
Yeah. We had kind of a couple weeks ago, you know, I wrote a couple things and, you know, we saw some pretty good numbers off of them and I kind of got the other two guys kind of motivated a little bit. And so we've kind of put together a little, you know, we want to make sure we get during the week, we want to make sure we get at least, you know, one new thing out there a day. And, you know, with all this activity, you know, we've been able to push out a little bit more and it's been good. We've been seeing some good results and people seem to like it. So we'll see how long this goes.
Well, good. I would hope so. I know that,
yep.
You know, that's what I at one time tried to do at the Conclave, and it worked for a little while, and then it's just tough. I'm still writing over there, and Doug writes occasionally. In fact, Josh Gilliam actually wrote a piece today for the first time, and he told me not to faint when I saw it was up there. So we've got some stuff, and I should have gotten up and written about Rhett Fowler today. I'll do that this weekend after nobody cares anymore, that's when I'll do it. So, it's interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I've been listening to the podcast. Looks like I've been surprised at how many people have been updating their podcasts in the off season. John and I will do it again probably in January, probably around winter warm up time, unless something happens. If they sign Encarnacion, then we'll have a show about it. But we'll probably be back around winter warm-up and then probably start to a little bit more regularly as the season gets going. It's kind of hard to believe that we're this deep into, you know, the winter. I mean, we're getting, you know, we get past the next few weeks, so you really start thinking about spring training.
Yep.
It's just crazy. So, all right. Well, for John Nagel, I'm Daniel Shopto. We wish y'all the greatest of holidays, and we'll talk at you later.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!